You know, you're tired, you're poor, you're huddled masses yearning to be free. The wretched refuse of your teeming shores, and these the homeless tempt us tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. Sometimes when I read those words of the Statue of Liberty, I wonder if we really mean that in America anymore. Do we really want the world's huddled masses yearning to be free? Our founder John Wesley had a unique way of weaving personal holiness and social concern into religious conviction. He not only helped people find the Lord, but he helped people find jobs and a place to live and a place to get well. He carried a deep passion for the whole person. And he said to the people, Methodists, they gave them a slogan, really, give none that asks relief either an ill word or an ill look. Do not hurt them if you cannot help them, and expect no thanks from anyone. Those words are in your sermon notes. I want us to read them together because I want you to take it home with you today. Read it with me. Give none that asks relief either an ill word or an ill look. Do not hurt them if you cannot help them, and expect no thanks from anyone. It's going to take some new eyes if we're going to see the world through the eyes of Christ. If we see Christ in the least of these, you and I are going to have to change. We need new eyes for seeing. I don't know about you, but I never read this parable that we've shared together today without feeling sobered by it. I'm sorry that you all wound up on the left-hand side this morning. Let it be a lesson to you. Next week, sit on the right-hand side, would you? It might be a little better. But it's a sobering statement, isn't it? And especially that phrase, inasmuch as you did it for one of the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you did it for me. Have you seen Jesus in the eyes of the poor lately? A representative of a social agency in our community came to talk to our staff a few weeks ago and said that the way to get rid of homeless people, you get rid of them like you get rid of coyotes. You cut off their food supply. I stood up right in the middle of the meeting and confronted him on that subject. Some of my staff members thought I was out of line, so they reported me to the staff parish chair, who did his good job of calling me to accountability. But since the story is circulating now around Sunday school classes, I thought I'd set the record straight today once and for all. Nobody, and I mean absolutely nobody, will ever stand in any pulpit of any church I serve and compare human beings to unwanted animals that need to be exterminated. I just will not tolerate it. And in the words of Forrest Gump, that's about all I got to say about that. Have you seen Jesus? The eyes of the poor. We need new eyes for seeing Jesus in the life of the prisoner. In the children's movie Whistle Down the Wind, Haley Mills and a couple of her friends are playing out in a barn, in a hay barn, and they uncover a vagrant who's hiding under the straw and scared to death. The little kids said, "Who are you?" And the vagrant, who's likewise scared to death, said, "Jesus Christ." What he meant as an expletive, they took as a fact. And so they started treating him like Jesus. They held him with awe, respect. They brought him food and blankets. And they told him their stories. And he told them theirs. And an ex-convict was converted by the kindness of little children. Have you seen Jesus lately? Look into the eyes of the sick that are around us. An elderly woman in a Scotland nursing home left this note at her death. What do you see, nurses? What do you see? What are you thinking when you're looking at me? A crabby old woman, not very wise, uncertain of habit, with faraway eyes. Let me tell you who I am. I'm a child of 10 with brothers and sisters. I'm a bride of 20 in love with my lover. I'm a mother of 40 with children who are growing much too fast. I'm a widow now. And yes, sometimes I live in the past. So open your eyes, nurses, open and see. Not a crabby old woman, look closer. See me. Open our eyes, Lord. We need to see you in the least of these. Whole host of people joined this congregation last Sunday. One person joined, it was the first time she was in this sanctuary, ever been to this church. She wrote me a very nice email this week and said, you know, I came to Brentwood United Methodist Church just to rule it out. I'm new in Nashville and I knew I wasn't going to like this big old church. And so I just came to mark it off the list. But she said a Sunday school class welcomed me and treated me like a real person and called me by name. And I came to the 11 o'clock service and you started talking about the community of faith and how everybody needed to belong to somebody and that we needed to make that connection with one another in order to make it in this kind of world. And I just got up out of my pew and joined up. You see, strangers don't like to be taken. They want to be taken in. Want to be loved. Have you seen Jesus lately? Have you seen Jesus in the eyes of a stranger? You see, my friends, we need some work on our eyes. We got to see in different ways. If we don't get that part right, the rest of it's not going to matter. We need eyes that are transformed so that in the poor and in the prisoner and in the sick and in the stranger, somehow we see the presence of Jesus as you've done it to one of the least of these. My brothers and sisters, you've shared it with me. And then if we can get across that bridge, there's some other things we can do. There's some other things we can do. And the first thing we can do is to do no harm. I think Wesley had a tremendous phrase. It's in your bulletin. If you cannot relieve, do not grieve. You ought to just put that down as a motto. Would you say it with me? If you cannot relieve, do not grieve. That's wonderful advice, you know. Oh, I know. Sometimes we say, you never know what good you're doing. You never know who you've helped as you've gone along. You never know. People are never going to tell you about it. You just never know what kind of good you've done in life. Well, if that's true, the opposite must be likewise true. You never know what kind of harm you've caused. You never know what kind of pain you brought. You never know what kind of hindrance that you've rendered to somebody along the way. So if we are comforted by not knowing the good we do, might we likewise be confronted by the evil we cause? If the first promise of a physician is to do no harm, should not that be also the motto of every preacher, of every educator, of every lawyer, in fact, of every Christian who walks the face of the earth? Do no harm. Remember Jesus coming down from the temple one day and the self-righteous Pharisees show up with him with a woman caught in the act of adultery. They say to Jesus, isn't it right that she ought to be stoned? And Jesus stoops and writes in the ground, and then he stands up and says, do you remember what he says? Of course you do. You without sin throw the first rock. The first rule is to do no harm. Don't make it worse for somebody else. Then if you can get past that, there's some good you can do. I love Wesley's phrasing of it. I keep it at my home office. I watch it, see it every day, all the time. Do all the good you can by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, to all the people you can, as long as you ever can. What a motto for life. Just do good. Just do good. You do good when you pray. One of the finest gifts you can ever give to another person is to pray for them. Don't pray as a last resort. Pray as the first opportunity. You see, prayer doesn't change things as much as it changes us. It gets our hearts in tune, and it makes our motives pure, and it gives us the courage to live and to pray in Jesus' name. Pray for one another. And then just do what you can. Do good. Day in, day out. When you're supposed to and when you haven't thought about it. Just do good, said Wesley. It didn't make any difference where you were in the system. You never got too high to get your hands dirty in service to other people. He believed that to be a Methodist meant to be in service, and he held it for everybody who would join his movement. Oh, yeah, some people resisted. He got a letter one day from a lady called Miss J.C. March who protested that she was just too much of a gentlewoman to be visiting these poor people in their wretched homes. And Wesley wrote back to her with these words, "Take up your cross, woman. Remember the faith. Jesus went before you, and he'll go with you now. Put off that gentlewoman stuff. You've been called to a higher character than that. Do good. Just every time you get a chance. Every place that you possibly can. Do good. Don't ever get beyond caring for the sick and being compassionate with the poor. Don't ever get beyond that. But there's another way Wesley went about doing good. He attacked the problem, the system that caused the problem. You see, he visited the sick and thought all of his people ought to visit the sick, but he also wrote books on how to be healthy. He, along with Wilberforce and others, were the mainstream in the movement against slavery. He deplored the conditions in the prisons in England as any human being would, and he protested against it again and again, creating many enemies of his own for doing so. We live in a country, a wonderful, wonderful United States where poverty is increasing. I don't understand that. Where jails are overcrowded. Where there are 39.2 million people without any health insurance. You've heard me say that before, but it's the truth, my friends. There's enough brain power and enough wisdom and enough education and enough compassion in a congregation of this church alone, not to mention the others up and down Franklin Road, to do something about some of the systemic problems that our country has, not for profit's motive, not for a politician's reason, but because we just care about human beings, the least and the lost among us. We ought to just get up and do something about it. One thing more I want to say, then I'm going to quit. When you got through doing good, just forget about it, would you? I love a story. And there are two words in it that I love the most. It's Lord, when. Did you catch that? It's all over the story. When did we see you hungry? When did we feed you or thirst, find you thirsty? When did we give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in? When did we see you needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and come to visit you? Lord, when? I don't remember when. I don't remember it. And that's true discipleship. That's real caring. You see, goodness is not a sudden blaze of glory. One, it's not some announcement in the paper. It's not a plaque on some church wall. Goodness is something done simply for the glory of God and the good of other people. That's what it's all about. And when it's done, forget about it. So am I my brother's keeper? No, I don't like keeping. It speaks of manipulation and it speaks of control. Most people don't need somebody else to tell them what to do. Am I my brother's brother and sister? Well, that's something different, you see. Because if I read the book right, Jesus is the brother of all of us, isn't he? So if Jesus is the brother of all of us, I think that makes all the rest of us kin to one another. And you ought to take care of your kinfolk, you know? Inasmuch as you did it for one of the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you did it for me. Let it be.